For those who are joining us on the line, when we started our meeting this morning at 10 o'clock, was not being able to host the meeting, and we had to go into, we had to get AT&T to give us a new host password. So what we did, we were in open session here, and the chairman called the meeting into open session, and as planned, it went into executive session, which then at that point, if we'd been able to be on the line, we would have been hanging up and then going into the executive session, but we weren't able to do that, so the chair opened the meeting with the people that were here in place. So the executive session went until about 11:40. We got a late start because of what was happening. Started about 10:20, and so then we went into the executive session and finished about 11:45. And so, Mr. Chairman, when it calls back.
Now we're going to start back into our agenda items, which is the budget workshop.
Okay.
First agenda item is board planning and the budgeting and student success.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we have the PowerPoint. Can you get the PowerPoint up for me? And you all have the PowerPoint as well. Okay. So, as you know, as a part of what we do with the budget, there's been a lot of planning that's been going on for months, and we are now in the budgeting phase of the process, and it's all about student success. As you know, we spent several months working on the new vision and values for the college district, the mission. We didn't have that as part of the PowerPoint because, again, it's pretty straightforward. It's what we do by law. But remind everybody that our vision is we want to be known for enriching the lives and futures of those we serve as a unique rural community college national model of success that includes a campus specializing in deaf education. And what we value as we do that are our students, our community, our diversity, our unity, our excellence, and our integrity. And from there, we have four strategic goals that we determined that we would focus on, and specifically just shortening them. Strategic goals, access, increase opportunities and participation in programs to enhance the social and economic mobility of students in the communities we serve, student success, create a quality educational experience to advance successful course completion, retention, graduation, transfer and job placement, community and workforce development, collaborate with community partners to develop relevant and innovative programs and initiatives that enrich lives in the service region, performance excellence, foster an organizational environment that cultivates equitable student and employee success through effective and efficient operations and infrastructure. So we based our entire process on all of the vision, the mission, the values, our strategic goals. And as a part of that, then, obviously, our human resources are critical to the accomplishment of that goal, of those goals. And so as we do on an annual basis, we do a breakdown of what district employees, where our employees are located. And we have that listed for you. District employees, we have 307 people that are behind the strategic plan and will be working to get this accomplished. Moving to the next section, physical resources. As you know, on an annual basis, we keep up with HCJCD projects, deferred and preventative maintenance across the college district for every campus. And this is something that the maintenance group and as well as others that are involved in special projects will update as we get new information And as we have new things that come to our attention that we need to work on. So this has been updated and is a part of the budgeting work we've done. And as we move into the preliminary budget, we will tie back into some of this information that we have in the deferred and preventative maintenance document. So the preliminary budget. Moving right into the preliminary budget, let me just say right up front, we always, at this time of year, we're ending one budget, we're moving into the new budget, and so we will have a few things. We have some things that have been ordered that if they don't make it into by August 31st, then we'll have to add them into next year's budget, and we're trying to get all of those things that have been ordered in. But at this point, we're presenting the budget as if those things are here with us, and so we'll move forward. Okay, preliminary budget access. Let me just say that the budget, of course, has been prepared for the regular things that we do, the everyday operations, and so all of that is there. But we, at the same time, tried to focus on the four strategic goals that we have and tried to do things that would be innovative, strategic approaches. Some cost money, some do not, but we wanted to focus on those priorities. And so in the access goal area, we are having summer boot camps, Dreams Week. It's already started at SWID. We started that yesterday. Our other campuses will be starting Dreams Week coming this next week. And so we have those things that are happening, and these are all preparing students to, as they access their college opportunity. We also have implemented software that is going to make it easier for financial aid and scholarship application process district-wide. So that's something that we've built in. Dual credit scholarships, a dual credit summer camp at SWID, those are things that are being accomplished by the Big Spring Area Foundation gave us a grant that will enable us to do some of those things. And so we have implemented that into the budget. We are increasing our remote SWID adjunct faculty pool so that we can offer more classes in ASL. And that, again, provides more access for those students. You'll recall that with our Title V grant, you approved the EAB Navigate software earlier in the year, and that is allowing us to provide the opportunity for students to do some career development before they're going to begin their pathways at the college. And so that is in motion, and we're working on that. We've also implemented, as an access measure, additional testing software for entrance testing, and we're also traveling to high schools to provide testing. The other strategic goal, then, is student success. Again, you'll see EAB Navigate software. That software is broad, what it can do for us, and another thing that it can do is help us with a tool for tracking pathways and already mentioned career development. So as students are beginning their pathway and we take them through Dreams Week, sometimes they begin to, in their leads, they're going to begin thinking about other careers they might be interested in. And so we're going to be able to use that software to enable us to do that. We're working on curriculum development, again, as it relates to student success. We're revamping advising. We're going to have a holistic advising approach across the district. Again, a lot of this is a part of our Title V project and grant, and so we're working on that. We continue to focus on students' basic needs with success funds and what we're doing with our food pantries at the different campuses, all in an effort to enhance student success, and we're also doing some things to enhance student activities and extramurals and intramurals, particularly on our SWID campus. That is, we have a big focus on that for this coming year. We've got some upgrade to equipment and additional science models that we've built in to the budget. We're enhancing the student debit card options for management of campus functions for our students. Next strategic goal, community and workforce development. We've built in and we've talked to you about some of these and you've approved some of these as years gone on or has progressed, but we will be implementing and working toward a vet tech. We've got a grant that we've submitted and we're trying to get support for that. We're looking at dental assisting. Some of these will be CE. Some of these will be credit certificate programs. Teacher aid, substitute teacher, patient care technician, leadership, and cybersecurity. So those are, again, areas that we are working on. Somebody needs to mute. We have built in live projects, particularly you know that what we did with the construction trades program last year, and we have students that are building the softball field house, but we're looking for opportunities to do that with all of our different CTE programs so that students have the opportunity with some of these live projects. Health-related CE certificates via distance learning in LAMESA. That is something, if you'll recall, we got a grant from the Workforce Board. Actually, it was right during the pandemic, and we were able to do some enhancement of our distance learning equipment in LAMESA. We haven't been able to use it much because of what's been going on, but we intend to provide additional opportunity for people in LAMESA for health-related CE certificates using that equipment. We also are working on, have an opportunity to deliver welding with some adjunct faculty that happen to be deaf that we will be able to take provide the training in the native language and not going through an interpreter or a person who is, it's their second language. It will be, we have some deaf welders that are going to be able to deliver in their first language, and so that facilitates what we're able to do for the students in the classroom. So that's something that we are working on. Nonprofit seminars funded by the San Angelo Health and Area Foundations, that's something that's a direct effort in that community to do some things through seminars and actually even some of the CE programs that I mentioned earlier that we're going to be able to do with those grants. And later in the meeting, you're going to be hopefully approving a couple of those requests. And we got from the Permian Basin Association of Pipeliners, we got a grant for STEM, welding, HVAC, construction, trade scholarships. And we started doing some of that work this summer, but we're going to continue doing that as the year goes on. Performance excellence. We built in, we continue to work on our salary structure. Y'all know as a board that has been a major goal, and we continue to work on that. And look at our scenario, making sure that we're keeping our salaries competitive and trying to improve on that so that we, again, make some progress in that area. We have smart board replacements with whiteboards and projectors, computer rotations that we've built into the budget. Unit 4, Student Information System, we're kicking that off in September. Of 2021, and so we're going to be going through a conversion. So that is going to be, again, an opportunity to improve our performance and also be something that will be good for our students. We've got light boards that have been installed for better online presentations, and basically some of that we're being able to do through some of the monies that we've received through some of the federal grants. And those light boards basically enhance the online opportunity or online delivery for students that we're trying to improve as we go along. We have a designated light board room that has been set up on the SWID campus. We're working on cybersecurity measures and streamlining of purchasing processes as a part of our efforts this year. We're enhancing district-wide and adding school solution software at the San Angelo site for maintenance management. And we're also we are also enhancing our focus on our disaster recovery plan. So those are some kind of high-level new things, a little strategic that we're doing that are above and beyond the normal what we do, operational kinds of things. And that's the way we've prepared this budget. What we're doing with raises and what we've built in our steps for all categories, and we've included that. We have also worked on years of service cap. That has been something that has been capped at 10 years, and in some instances has been difficult for us to be able to attract some individuals that could have up to 20 years, and in some instances even more. But we went down the path of increasing that cap from 10 to 20 years, so that will help us be more competitive for new employees. And then current employees that were not given that same opportunity upon employment and based on the same criteria, we're going back and we're addressing that so that all will be treated the same. There are some point adjustments in salaries based on responsibilities for some positions. And we also recognition of specialized credentials. We've made sure that we have addressed that for all positions that have specialized credentials. Our good news on our employee insurance rates, they are pretty stagnant. We've not seen increases for our employees, and of course these packages, that depends, this is state, and in many years we see an increase, but we are seeing they've kept it where we're able to, there's no increases. So that is good for our employees not to see their insurance rates going up. So then, to talk a little bit more about the preliminary budget, I was talking specifically about those areas, but let me just talk a little bit more before we go into the actual fiscal resources. The budgets, the way they've been prepared, all operating budgets are balanced for daily operations and include these proposed salary increases that I just mentioned. We, for the most part, the budget covers business as usual, except the ones that I talked about, some of those strategic goals that we have. We then, as you know, we work with each budget is separately worked on, and we look at, because each budget has different revenue streams, and so then when we bring the total budget back to you on August 30, everything will be pulled back together. But at the preliminary budget level, which is where we are in the workshop, we have everything separated out. And so looking at each one of them, as always, we're looking at unrestricted revenue right now. We will be moving into the final budget. We'll have the restricted revenue, but most of that is relative to federal monies for Pell Grants, things like that, that we don't have any control. They're just budgeted certain ways. But that will all come in and be added by the time we get to the final budget. So today, looking at the unrestricted revenue for all of those budgets, we, as always, we go through and we look at what we project enrollment, which then impacts what tuition is going to look like. We try to adjust that, so we monitor that as far as what's happening with enrollment. We tried to be conservative the last 2 years based on what is happening. Of course, last year we didn't know for sure what would happen with the pandemic, saw some of the results of that. Then we're having this surge right now, so we're trying to take that into account. And so we've tried to approach the budgets accordingly. Our SWID budget overall increased by about $9,000, $9,850. Our LMESA budget increased by $67,069. The Big Spring budget, by the time we build in the deferred maintenance that we're going to talk about, is basically going to be flat. And then Angelo budget, we also are in a scenario there where it decreased by $270,499, and we're going to address how we're making that work. So overall, that's what those unrestricted budgets are looking like. A big challenge that we had in our preliminary budget was insurance. And as we know, over the last few years, we have had significant health claims, and we had the winter storm. And so there have been a lot of impacts that really started happening in 2016 that ended up impacting what our insurance was going to look like. And so our premiums have increased significantly, and about a 35 to 40% increase, isn't that right, Brenda and Steve, was about 35 to 40% increase just on regular premiums. And so we've addressed that in our budget. We'll talk about that. You'll have an item later about how we're going to actually what you want us to do relative to the insurance. But as a part of that, and we don't have Jim Brundage, who is our agent, we don't have him on the line yet. So I'm going to hold off to talk about that specifically into insurance policies and premiums. But what we've done, in the budget, we have built in the increase, the premium increase, and then there is the consideration of what to do about a buy-down. And a buy-down, basically a Wendhell 2% buy-down option that we will discuss in more detail when we get to that point. But we have built that in the budget. And that 2% buy down option costs $482,655, and so that then would be by the different budgets we would be allocating that out based on percentage of property. So again, we're going to work on that. We'll talk about that more when we get into that part of the agenda. We also mentioned already the Title V grant monies are providing opportunity to implement some of the software things that we talked about, and so I've talked about that. We know as we begin the new year, we're still kind of up in the air and don't know what's going to happen for sure with our GO prisons. But we have built the budget as if they in those positions. The GO positions are by contract, and so GO pays for those. So we are starting our budget as if everything stays the same, and we would adapt if GO is redirected. Then we will have to adjust for that at that point in time. But again, that's a contract in. Those money come in through revenue that way, and we've been working with some of our faculty have already been looking at other job opportunities within the college district in the event that something happens, and we should know something in about the middle of September what is going to happen. All right. And so then we also we looked at trying to go through all my okay. So each budget had its own particular challenges. So kind of I'm going to work through them. We're not going to be recommending an overall Howard College when we get to August 30. We will not be recommending a deficit budget overall for Howard College. We will for SWID. Within the Howard College budget, there will be the San Angelo section of it will be a planned deficit, and so it will be built in. But again, because all those come back together again, the total will not be a deficit budget, and we are proposing a planned deficit budget for the Howard College San Angelo budget at negative $338,696. The way that we that we offset that. We have a fund balance, as you know, for each one of our campuses. And then we through your guidance, you want to keep a 30% reserve for fund balance. And so what we are doing then is we're taking the excess over the 30% and we're using that as a way that we can offset some of the things that we're doing. And so what we're doing there, and actually we had tried to, years ago, we built some money into that reserve when we went down the path of those buildings in San Angelo, and we put some money back through what we were generating in the San Angelo area, because again, remember, all this is separate. We're not using Howard County money for San Angelo or San Angelo. We're keeping everything separate. That's why we do all these different budgets as we move into our final budget. And so what we would do then, we would strategically plan a $200,000 withdrawal from that excess for the San Angelo campus. And so we built that in, and then we also have some technology upgrades that would be a part of that. And then the wind hail buy down that I've already mentioned, that the proportion for San Angelo would be built into that, that would come out of that excess reserve from our fund balance. SWID, we also structured a planned deficit budget of minus 361,883. And we, again, same approach, excess over the 30 is what we would be using for those projects and several projects that we need to do, replacement of an evaporative cooler, the trades building, parking lot repairs, light and seal coat, some technology upgrades, and potential demolition of the diagnostic center. We have been working, talking to the city about the possibility of whenever they go out to do their big seal coat project later in the year, that we could team in that and put our projects in there, and so hopefully get a better price. And then also looking at some opportunities relative to demolition of the diagnostic center. All right, and then we, again, building all of the different things that, as we keep talking, it'll be a part of this overall budget. Our roofing project continues, as you know, and so we're not through with that. That moves into this fiscal year, and we also, unfortunately, we have the March 13th, 2021 claim that's still being resolved. We also have storm issues that we had that are still being resolved, but we're working on those, and those will be part of the efforts of what we will be doing this next fiscal year. Okay. Let's move then to fiscal resources then. So how will we do this? Okay. As you know, our revenue streams are different. And so for every campus, we have to approach it a little differently. And so I'm going to talk broadly and then specifically for some of the campuses. Tuition and fees. You know that we increased our tuition and fees this last spring. Back in March, approved that, and so we've built that into the budget. We also then, financial aid, that actually then depends on the number of students that, if we have large numbers of students that are Pell, that impacts as far as revenue, getting in the way of individuals that are coming to the college and are using Pell Grants. Scholarships, we continue to get lots of support from scholarship money, and so that's built in as revenue for the budget. single and multi-year federal and state grants. I've talked about some of those. We have state grants through the nursing shortage and Perkins, which is also federal. We have the AEL grant. I mentioned the Title V grant. And then we have those federal funds. And, you know, we talked about that earlier, several meetings back, about what those grants are allowing us to do relative to what has happened at the state level relative to our funding. And I, again, addressed that to a great degree last time. So let's move into the next slide. We have foundation assets, and we have a foundation for San Angelo, for SWID, and then Big Spring, which also includes LAMESA. And you see what our assets are there. We have had an increase for every one of them, and so in some instances we're able to use our foundation assets to help us with some of the things that projects that we're looking at. Fund balance analysis, that's the next page, and that helps you see what we have in the way of the 30% and then any excess over the 30% that we can use for some of the projects that we're talking about. What is in the gray, there's this thing called GASB that we've talked about before, and actually it is an accounting approach that is required that we have to, as if we were not, I guess one way to say it is if the state was not providing retirement, if they backed down on what they were doing, we still have the responsibility to take care of that. And so this is an accounting measure that is basically applied to our books in order to see what that would look like. And so when you see GASB applied, then we don't have anything in the way of reserves. But people, it's really, I hate to say it, but in a way it's kind of an exercise. And Brenda, am I saying it right so far? It's an exercise that shows how much we would need to have in the event something like that happened. And this is not anything. All colleges have this applied, and so it's just something that we report to you so you know what it looks like. Okay, next slide is our changing funding structure and what happened in the last session. As you know, we ended up, because they did not do a hold harmless, then we actually saw, because of what happened with our contact hour generation during the base year, which was right the pandemic, we saw significant loss with what we generate at the prison. And then in some instances by campus, and it varied. And so we got a negative, two, rounding it up, 2.3 from the state. That is split up into core operations, contact hours, and student success points. And this does not include the $1 million need-based supplement because of the way that has to be handled relative to federal funds. So that is basically what happened at the state level. Of course, that's for a two-year period of time, but it impacts, it's basically split between both years. Still good with me, Brenda? Raise your hand at any time. Okay, the success points drive the overall legislative appropriation, and what happened in the session, they put more money in success points. As we talked about, they shifted our buckets a little bit. They put more money into the success bucket and less in the contact hours section, didn't change the core op, the core operations. And so we saw a little bit of increase in the student success section, but overall, then we saw that decrease. When you look at the student success page, you can see that we had some decreases, and that's reflective of what's going on with the change in students and drop in students. And so those are things that we are monitoring as we're moving forward to the next legislative session, since we're funded on some of that. The next slides reflect contact hours and what was happening percentage-wise by campus. This is important because we take the contact hours that we receive, our appropriation that relates to contact hours, and we split it up by the campuses based on how they generate contact hours. And so that then drives the revenue that we'll look at in just a minute as far as how the different budgets are designed. When you go to the next page, you can see workforce training, and this actually doesn't even, this is not really totally base year presented. It's really by academic year. And so what you're seeing, the federal prison, even though it's showing a decline, it's really, that particular slide, we always do this annual. That doesn't really reflect what happened during the base year, because during the base year, the federal prison, that decreased significantly. And so that's where a lot of the loss for the Big Spring campus will come. So then when you get to the next page, funding methodology, then what we do is we go in and we approach each budget then based on each campus budget then, what did they do in the way of contact hours, student success points, and then we allocate it out. And then we, as far as core operations, we also have an approach with that. And so that helps you see then what we have, and we're showing it to you all the way back to 15-16, but what is in the at the bottom of each category will be how that was split up this year, and so what that money looks like. So you can see the shifts. The Big Spring budget is seeing significantly less. The La Mesa budget is seeing some more. The San Angelo budget is seeing an increase. And so that, again, is divided up that way. Then what we were able to do, going back, if you'll remember, with the federal funds, then what we had to do is we had to come back in, and then we fill it back. And we were fortunate that because of the way the CARES grant, we can use that money, those federal dollars, we're being able to use that to offset state appropriation loss. So we're able to go back in and fund that back to try to get that back to basically no loss. And so that is what we've done with those federal dollars. That was why we spent so much time on that. You remember the meeting, we talked about that quite a bit and how we approached that. And we did the year-to-year approach, and we continue to, we still lack one question being answered from the federal government. We're actually trying to get our auditors to help us make a determination so we can know how to move forward, but we are still trying to contend. Right now, we're the $500,000, which was a new allocation that the state implemented for 11 colleges based on certain metrics, and we were one of the 11, and it basically is small colleges that were ended up being a part of that. But right now, we're not sure that we can use it as a benefit, and it becomes the way that we're trying to get answers on being able to use it as a benefit, as opposed to it having to be seen as not less lost revenue in our bottom line state appropriation dollar, if that makes sense. And so right now we have built our budget with it as a part of the makeup of what we got from the state. I hope that makes sense. And so because we don't have an answer, and so we're trying to approach it, and we continue to try to get that answer. We've called and called and called. We were able to have a Zoom meeting with the two individuals at the federal level. I've called the guy back. Brenda has reached out to him. And then this morning, we got a grant notice that came in, and it looks like we might have a new person, and so that may be part of the problem. That person may be gone. We were able to find the number because most of it, we've had to do it through email, and but we were able to find a number. So we may be barking up at, we may be having conversation with a new person trying to get that answer. So we're trying to get that done, but we're also trying to work with our auditors to see if they agree with our reasoning the legislature intended it as a benefit for those 11 colleges, and right now it's just being used as lost revenue if we're not able to do that. All right, so then for our campuses, our SWID campus, as you know, is totally, everything is state dollars. So all that, it's state, with the exception of some tuition and fees. Brick and mortar is provided by the state for our SWID campus. But we basically, what we get from the state and then tuition and fees drive the SWID budget. Our San Angelo and La Mesa budgets then have a little different scenario. If they don't have, those budgets don't have tax revenue. Those budgets are driven by what we get in contact hour generation, what we get in tuition and fees, and if we have any kind of special grants or donations or something that can help with those particular campus budgets. And so those are, we get to the bottom line with those revenue streams accordingly for those three budgets that way. Our Big Spring budget then is the one that has, it and is the only one that has the tax revenue. So everything I was talking about previously, with the exception of our SWID budget, is just a straight appropriation. But the San Angelo, La Mesa, and Big Spring budgets, then the contact hours are allocated accordingly. The tuition and fees are allocated accordingly. Tuition and fees for SWID, obviously. And then their appropriate foundations, federal dollars, whatever. But when we get into taxes, then taxes only relate to the Big Spring district budget. And so we talked a little bit about this at the last meeting. Again, this is, as you know, this has been building. This conversation has been building over several meetings. And so at this particular time then, as I had reported last time we met, that our chief appraiser shared what he had presented as far as what the adjusted taxable value was for this year and based on last year. So we got that information, and at the last meeting we were still waiting. Tiffany Sales, who's our assessor, was still taking that information, beginning the work, and doing the tax rate calculation worksheet that she has to do for the taxing entities. And so that process has been completed, and so that then helps us then move into this next part as far as the tax rate calculation. So we have last year's adjusted taxable value was 6.2, and so that then the total no new revenue rate revolves around that number. And so based on what last year's total or adjusted taxable value is, then that then drives what is the total no new revenue rate for the upcoming year. And so that ends up being the 0.237548. Tiffany, again, this is all based on this worksheet, and it's all coming from the state, and goes through all different kinds of considerations as far as what it ends up being. But that is our total NNR. And then the voter approval rate is also then a part of that tax rate calculation. And the voter approval rate then is if you go to a certain number, then that triggers an automatic election. And so that both of those numbers then, those rates, are then part of a notice that we have on our website right now, and that will be part of what we have going forward. They've changed a lot of the approach, not this session, but the session before. They did a lot of work on taxes and how it would be presented in the communities. Nearly everybody in the room should have by now received a postcard that will tell you how you can go to this website. You can look at what each entity is doing relative to taxes. The information is there. It also gives you the ability to look at what your taxes or your property is assessed at, and you can figure out what your taxes are going to be relative to what different entities are proposing. So then there's a process that will happen, and I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I think this is an appropriate time to talk about it. Whatever you decide today then will trigger different notices. Assuming you go with the total no new revenue rate, you will not be going or something below, and we actually are proposing something just a little under the total NNR, which means that we're bringing in the same amount of levy as we did last year. And so if you do that, then that does not trigger a tax hearing, and so if you go above the total NNR, then there will be a requirement of a tax hearing. And used to we had to have two, now you have to have one. And so if you go above that total NNR, that's what happens. There'll be a specific notice. There'll be a specific tax hearing date. And that would be what happened. If you decided to go above, if you go up above that VAR, that voter approval rate, what happens on that? There's a different notice for that. And in that notice, then you will, there would be a tax hearing, and then there would be the election requirement and all that. The other notice, if you stay with the total NNR, then there will be a notice that will go out, but it'll basically just be saying that you will be having, when you will be adopting the tax rate. And you generally adopt the tax rate at the August 30 meeting. And so that would be what would be on that notice. That notice will also contain the information relative to what you determine today you're going to propose. And it would have also what the impact to the taxpayer will be. And so so those are things for you to know. We built the budget. The preliminary budget has been built on a revenue that is it's just right under the total NNR. But we're bringing in the same levy as we did last year, And so that's the way we built this budget and are presenting it to you. Now, what does that mean? Okay, at the same time, our adjusted taxable value for last year decreased. And so because it decreased, then that means to bring in the same amount of money, that tax rate's going to go up. So that happens. Whenever your tax base decreases, then to bring in the same amount of money, that's what's going to happen. Your rate's going to go up. And so that's a factor. Another factor is that what has happened with properties, particularly homesteads, assessed values have gone up. You'll remember that there was a lot of our chief appraiser has shared this through a lot of different through the newspaper, but I know that they've tried to do it through other means as well. But we were in a situation where our values were under what they needed to be based on what the state expected them to be based on other comps in the state. They had to address that because what was happening is that it was impacting our school district's funding. There was effort to do that. And so the assessed values have gone up as far as properties. And they've gone up overall. Of course, it's going to vary by the individual the individual property. But the percentage is around 7.35%. And so the average home, when you go to the next page then, based on what we're talking about, you go to the next page and you look at the tax rate calculation and you see that the change in the average homestead assessment, again, for the county, went up by about $6,631 or 7.35%. So that's also going to be a factor. You're going to have your tax rate that is going up because the value has gone down, and then you're going to also have the average home dynamic that is a part of that. So with the rate that we are proposing of 2023, and we've built our budget on, and again, your decision, obviously, but we are going, instead of the 237548, we are proposing 236777. That is still going on an average home, because of the factors I've already talked about, that would be an increase of $33.84 for the year. That is, as compared to last year, that is a 17.31% difference because of what's happening with the tax base and what's happened with the homestead. The tax rate, because of what has happened, is up 9.28% because of what is happening with, again, those factors that I've already mentioned. So that is what we did. We built the budget that way. When you look at it from just the $100,000 dynamic and keeping that static, then it's basically $20.10 more per each $100,000 property. And so it just kind of depends on what's happening for people's properties, how they're being assessed, valued, and all that as far as what the outcome is. Our debt rate, on the tax rate calculation, and the debt rate is a part of the total NNR. Our debt rate would be, where are we? The debt rate would be 0.020769, but it is a part of that total NNR. That's what everything is driven by, that total NNR, and so it's gone down because we had some excess from last year that we built in that helped, that we took that down so that we would have bring that that levy. We still have the same payment, but it's going to bring that levy down. Okay, so that is the way we built the budget as far as fiscal resources. And let me see here, where am I? Okay, and so, Mr. Chairman, shall I just keep going?
Yes, ma'am, please.
Okay, so we're kind of moving then out of the workshop into what you would start doing your action items.
Just say something, because I know you're making notes, and that's good. Just keep in mind that all of these tax numbers and values and stuff are given to us. We are not the assessors. We are not the appraisers. We do not do the calculation. We do not, in a sense, figure the tax rate. That's Tiffany Sales and her and the appraisal board, right. All of those people. We tell them to keep a flat revenue, and they generate the rest. And as long as we generate a flat revenue, that's it. That's all. That's what we can do. But how all the rest of these numbers and tables and whatever spin out, that is not in our wheelhouse. Okay? We don't get to pick that the property values went up $6,000, or we didn't generate it, we didn't have anything to do with it. That's the appraisal district, and that's how they do it. So we did our part. We held, in fact, we came in slightly under what we could have come in at, but we basically are, it's a flat budget. And that's the important takeaway. In a sense, it's important that people's taxes will be going up, but we didn't do it. Okay, evaluations go down, the rate goes up, and there's nothing you can do about that. Nothing we can do.
Okay, Steve, did you text Jim? Yeah. Yeah, so if you would text him, please.
So in a sense, we're not raising the tax. The assessment district, the assessors are raising the tax.
Is he on? Adrian, are you on?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good deal. Okay. Trying to get a hold of Jim Brundage, our insurance agent, so just let me see if we're going to have him responding. Is he replying to you?
Yes.
Okay. He did reply to you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He said
dialing in. Okay, he's dialing in. Okay. All right, let's give him a minute.
You said, before he even gets on, I don't want to be rude to him, you said in one of the memos or something, one of the documents, that, you know, you put the insurance out to other people and haven't found any interest. Do we know which other carriers, other community colleges in the area are using?
In some instances, yes, we do. I mean, we can find all that out. But yeah, but several of them use Travelers. And he basically shops all those different carriers. And
you said nobody else was interested, but obviously if somebody is insuring, let's say, South Plains or whatever, that might be somebody that might be interested in insurance. I mean, because it's a similar college in a similar area, and it might
possibly
give us a way of getting a second quote. It's
yeah.
always, as you know, when we had this conversation with people last year, it's always dangerous when you only have one quote. Because I know from my insurance agents, as long back as I've been buying homeowners insurance, every year when the insurance goes up, the first thing they tell you is, oh, it went up for everybody.
Right.
While that may or may not be true, but the fact that your insurance went up doesn't necessarily mean my insurance should have gone up.
Right.
So it's always, I found it in the past, it's always best to try to get some kind of second quote.
Yeah, and that's what he was trying to do. And he couldn't get, yeah. Jim, are you on?
He said he's on hold.
How could he be on hold?
I wonder if he just didn't get it.
Is he listening to that music?
Eric, do you have everybody muted?
I did not mute everybody.
So he should be able to. Well, he shouldn't hear music. Yeah, he shouldn't. He doesn't hear us. Here, let me just call him. Tell him to, if he'd hang up, I'm calling his cell number. Okay. So I can just put him on speaker with my phone if he can't get in.
We have all this wonderful technology when it works.
It's great when it works.
It just works all the time.
That would be too easy.
Yeah, it would be. What's he saying? Okay. Because I'm sure he's trying to do it on his phone, so I'm getting a... That's why I can't get through him. Okay. Yeah, let me just call him. Yeah, well, he needs to hang up. Yeah, hang. Well, it's not a new access code. It was just a new host code. Because we got other people that are on the line. So I don't know what he's talking about. Is he off? Did he hang up? Okay. Okay, I'm calling. Hi, Jim. I'm going to put you on speaker, and I'll have you by another speaker. Okay, Jim. All right, board members, this is Jim Brundage, and Jim has been our agent for, oh my heavens, I'm not even sure how many years, 20?
About 25.
Yeah, 25, something like that. And so
yes,
we've worked with Jim for a very long time. And so, Jim, what we're on the part of the agenda, I don't know if you really looked at the agenda, but where we're talking about the insurance policies and premiums, I explained to the board during the workshop basically what had happened about the fact that our premiums have gone up, and then as far as we've got this buy-down option that we need to discuss. So, board members, let me kind of talk a little bit more, and then we can move into letting Jim explain. So when we got this information, Jim had let us know back in July to be anticipating that we were going to see there would be an increase in premiums. And again, this goes back to our history. We've had, since 2016, we've had numerous claims, hailstorms, and those are all listed in the policy itself, or the offer, the proposal. And then, as I mentioned a while ago, we have two that are out right now. So as a result of all that, then just our premiums themselves were going to be impacted by that. We then, as I mentioned, the buy-down, we don't have to do the buy-down, but when we got the premium information back in July, then we started thinking about what do we do. We worked it with our budgets, and then when we got the actual proposal, which I guess is now we've had it about 10 days, we then were able to look at how that would look and what that meant in the way of the property rate section in particular. And the rate increase is due to the hail losses that we've had. Excuse me. So we started considering, all right, do we want to do the buy-down? Is that something? And that's something we've not done before. And so we studied it internally first and tried to determine what did we think was best. And then we started reaching out. And last Friday, I asked Adrian Calvio, as y'all know, he's in the insurance field. And so I asked Adrian if he would come and look at some of this information with us, because I knew what would happen today is that the natural inclination, and I will tell y'all that Adrian did intend to be here. He had he lost a friend over the weekend, and he's been at a funeral this morning. And so he's called in. But we were kidding him about everybody was going to be looking at him at this point. So he really didn't stay away for that reason. So Adrian came in and we looked at the insurance and tried to analyze it and think about, you know, what do we do? What are the best options? All that kind of stuff, because I knew that we needed to be able to present something to you all today. We then decided we needed to call Jim because we had some questions of Jim, and so we did that, and he helped us understand a little bit more about the buy down and explained, the number of people that he actually went out and tried to get to submit a proposal on us. Jim, you want to, and it's actually listed in this document, but just to save everybody some time, do you want to just go over all the different carriers you reached out to?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to. We went to a number of carriers that used to be in the property business for schools in the state of Texas, but due to the amount of hailstorms that have hit Texas in the past, 6 and 7 years, especially the area where you're at. I'll give you an example. Ector County ISD had a $30 million hailstorm. Midland College had a $10 million hailstorm in 2019. Midland ISD has had multi-million dollar losses every year for the past 3 years for hail. So you're in a very high hail-prone area. And then you've got to add that on top of the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the Denton area, and then even the San Antonio area, which has been hit. College Station has been hit twice this year with big hailstorms, and some as big as 3 inches. So those storms over the past 6 years have caused so much loss. Plano ISD has had two $30 million claims. Wiley ISD in the Dallas-Fort Worth area has had a $30 million claim. So all the carriers that were like affiliated FM, Hartford, Zurich, AIG, none of them are offering coverage for schools in the state of Texas any longer. So we were declined not only by those carriers, we were declined by the pools that are public entity pools in Texas. They declined due to losses. Liberty Mutual declined your property, but they were willing to offer your casualty, which is your general liability and automobile and educators legal. They were offering that, but I didn't have a property quote to go with it, so I couldn't use them. Utica offered a casualty-only quote. They will not offer property. Trident, which is a public entity carrier, they would not quote your property due to losses. And then Philadelphia, which is a big casualty carrier for junior colleges, they wouldn't offer coverage either. So what I had done on that end of it, then I had to go to what we call the surplus market, which is, I think you've heard the term Lloyd's of London. So we go there and we have to put a layering approach together. So what you do is you get one insurance company will write the primary $5 million, and then another insurance company will write the next $5 million, and then two other carriers will write the next $10 million. And so you just stack the carriers on top of each other to get to the limit, your property limit on your policy. And we went to London, and we did end up, but we only had an indication only. And with a 5% wind tail deductible, which is what Travelers offered you, their premium just for the property was $1.6 million. And that was only an indication. And we're having this time of the year is really hard to get anybody to write property insurance for schools in the state of Texas. If you've had any kind of losses, it's even worse. And throughout the year, I send out a market summary or market outlook on where the insurance market is. And throughout this whole year, we've been looking, you know, we've been telling everybody, you're going to get a 20% or a 40% if you've had losses rate increase. And that's basically what Travelers did is Travelers really does not no longer want to write school, public entity school in the state of Texas. However, they have been with you all for a long time. And even though they've caught a number of losses, they agreed to stay on your account, but they came in with a 5% deductible. And that's about standard for this. Midland ISD has a 5% deductible. So you're right there where, because of where you're located in the state and the way that hailstorms have been hitting, you know, you're right there where most everybody is. And I told Mr. Drong that I said, you know, you're a State Farm agent. You sell homeowners insurance. I said, are you selling anything but a percentage deductible on homeowners? And he said, no, he's not. So even out here in El Paso, I have a percentage deductible on my house. So that's where the property market is in the state of Texas. It's just hard to find insurance companies that are offering any coverage.
Okay.
So that was our marketing.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, looking at this. Hartford property declined due to losses. Zurich, Texas Political Subdivisions, Property Casualty Alliance of Texas, Public Educators Association of Texas, and then Liberty Mutual, and then the ones that you were just talking about. So, it's an unfortunate, and there he is. There's Mr. Adrian. So Adrian then, so you'll know, Jim, Adrian just was able to make it to the meeting and he just walked in. And so, so we talked at length with Jim to try to understand do we make the recommendation to do the buy down, because the buy down then, you know, the total buy down cost is $482,655. Again, it would be divided up by the location. In La Mesa, we don't have to get insurance, property insurance, because the county owns that structure, and so we don't cover, we don't have to cover that. But for SWID and San Angelo and Big Spring, then we have to. And so we have a formula, and we do that by property, and we split it up. And so we approached it that way. So we talked about the different variables, about what has happened with the hailstorms, where we are. We've been very fortunate. We in San Angelo, we've had windstorms, we've had hailstorms, but nothing has, we just haven't been hit in San Angelo like we have been in the Big Spring area, which obviously takes in SWID and Big Spring. So, you know, we talked about, you know, you can not do the buy down and take the risk, but I'm about to get into the area that is way out of my league to start talking about the 2% buy down and what it means. So, Jim and Adrian, I'm going to get y'all to kind of explain, if you would, and Jim, I don't know, Adrian, do you want Jim to kind of start it off and then you can jump in? Jim, can you explain then what the buy down does?
Yes, I can. Let's say, so if you take the total building values as we have on the statement of values for just a Big Spring campus, you have $130,458,479,000 in values. So if you had a loss, a bad hailstorm comes through, and again, the deductible is per building. So if a hailstorm comes through and only two or three or four buildings are damaged, and none of the others are, then the deductible is only applied to those buildings. You only use those values in determining what the deductible would be. But what I did for my example is I took a worst-case scenario. So if every building has been damaged, the deductible, 5% of $130 million is $6,522,924. So that would be your deductible. So the deductible buy-down, what you're doing is for $482,000, you're going to purchase a policy that covers the deductible between 5% and 2%. So what that means is if you have that storm that I was just talking about, instead of having $6.5 million out-of-pocket, the college would have $2.6 out-of-pocket. The deductible buy-down carrier would pay the difference, the 3.9 difference. So what you're actually doing is, it's kind of a gamble as such, but you're spending $482,000 to save almost $4 million should you have a bad hailstorm. And it may not be that big, but and you haven't, the hailstorms you've had really haven't been every building at every that you have. So, but like I said, I just took worst case scenario. So that's what you're spending the money for, is the, in the event of a bad loss, you're going to save $4 million by spending $482,000. Adrian, does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Yep. And so we just, we worked through it, thought about it, and, you know, it's not an easy consideration because it's a lot of money. But if we have that worst case scenario, then we're going to be really wise because we did the buy down. If we don't, well then, again, lucky us, but we have spent that money. We talked with Jim about the fact that we find ourselves in this scenario next year, and what can happen to our benefit. Obviously, some of these properties will roll off because it's a 5-year. Is that right, Adrian, Jim? It's 5 years. It rolls off, and so we'll have some of the hailstorms that will go off. But that's great. That will be great for us. But as Jim shared on Friday, and we still have the situation where out there in the world, you know, what's happening other places that could be impacting insurance overall. Another thing that is to our disadvantage right now is the fact that we don't have all of our roofs on yet. We're right in the middle of this roofing project. And so that's impacting the offer, the proposal. So we've got to get our, we need to get our roofing projects complete, and we need to get, just like the one that we just had that was in March, we've got to get all that resolved. Then that puts us in a better position next year. Did I say that right, Jim and Adrian?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, is there anything else that one of you would say to the conversation as far as that it would be as would be important for the board to know?
As far as the on my end of it, until your area, until you can go a year without having a loss. I mean, since 2016, you've had 1, 2, 3, 4 hail losses and one water damage due to the freeze, which is a shock loss, basically. But until we can, until your area can get through a year where we don't have any losses, and putting your roofs on, will your roofs will have some kind of a hail warranty, I assume, that, and they'll be able to withstand some hail. So we can get through a year without any claims. I think next year it will make it a lot easier, and that's what I was recommending, that, you know, this year, because the roofs aren't on yet, I think you should consider the buy-down, and then next year we can see where the marketplace is, and if it hasn't been as bad as the past couple of years, we'll start seeing rates change a little bit, and I'll know better, but at least they'll be in a better position to negotiate. Next year, especially for the 2016 claims will come off, and then we're just at the 17, 19, 21 claims to worry about.
Yeah. Adrian, what would you say?
I am glad I've made it, first of all, just in time to get the darts thrown at me. Because, I wanted to make sure that you guys knew I wasn't hiding from this, because it's a big deal. Nobody likes to pay insurance. I think half the people think it's a scam, but you guys know whenever we need new roofs, the companies come on and they're going to put it on as long as you're carrying the proper insurance. So, as we spoke almost 2 hours Friday, right?
Yep.
Probably was
more three.
Hours, right?
Yeah.
Carrie was on the phone.
Yeah.
I mean, go back and forth, so I understand I'm a consumer as well. What I do know is COVID happened and no one ever thought that would happen. You know, we had the little cyber thing issue that happened that no one would ever thought would happen. Mm-hmm. So as an insurance agent, Jim, I'm sure, can agree that I see things that are never supposed to happen very often. So I would ask y'all to consider that as we're making the decision to do that. That's all. I mean, that's really what I would say. Just consider that these things are called accidents or because they're not called on purposes. You know, nobody means them to happen. Right? So, I agree. You know, the losses have hurt us. It's a math equation, guys. They're running a business. You can't run a business if you're losing money all the time. So it just is what it is, right? We run a business here called Howard College. You can't give away classes. You got to do what you got to do to survive. So keep that in mind as well. And I did hear on the phone that we were talking about, has Jim, I felt great with what Jim's done. I saw what he did. I'm looking at this proposal as a blessing now more than I probably did on Friday, because I'm starting to realize that, we're kind of in a good, with our claims history, the fact that the company was sticking with us, although it feels like a kind of a raw deal, is pretty impressive. As I'm not sure that we will find many, if anybody else, that would take a risk on the return on investment with us without it being a really, really, really bad deal for us. So.
Okay. So.
So I've got a question.
Yes.
And I know it's not possible, I'm just for information.
Sure.
The policy that we were under, the deductible was not a percentage on it, but we would go to a percentage.
It probably
was. Was it a percent? I don't know the answer to that.
What was our deductible before?
Probably one.
Yeah.
This year, your deductible is 2%. That's why I quoted the 2%. To get it back down to the 2.
Oh.
Okay.
So it was 2% before.
It was
2%. Was our deductible the same?
Well, it's 5%, but they're offering a buy down to get us back to 2%.
In other words, the $482,000 gets us to the same place we were before.
Is that the same premium
deductible?
Is that the same premium we had last year?
No, the premium. Well, no. We're having to pay more on the premium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're having to pay $482,000 basically more to get the same policy we had before.
Essentially, yes. Yep. And so, yeah, we talked about, what are some of the others doing in the region, and people are, you know, they're doing the buy downs. It's just unfortunate. Howard College for years and years and years, because we didn't have Hailstorm. We had our biggie years ago, and then we went for years when we weren't having anything, and then we've just had it one after another, you know. And it's just been unfortunate, but that's where we find ourselves.
And I'll round it. The premium without the buy-down this year was 460. Last year it was 330.
Yeah.
So we're going to go from 330 to over a million.
Well, 333 to 460, and then if you had the buy-down, yes.
I mean, if we wanted to have a 5% deductible, we could pay way less insurance. But if we want to keep it the 2% deductibility, that's what we talk about. That's what's going to cost us $400,000.
How big was our claim last year? That's 3% of
the one talking about the March one.
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
Not the one before that.
Yeah, the one before that.
Yeah, and that brings another
4.4 million.
Yeah, 4.4 million.
And there's still two outstanding claims we're going to change on. And they're still offering to keep us as business.
I know. It's a
big deal, guys. I'm telling you. I'm in the business. This doesn't happen. The State Farm.
So you think the buy down is a good thing?
I mean, I think it's worth. I agree with Jim, and I look because I'm an insurance agent. But even without being an agent, like right now, the way we don't have our roofs at replacement cost at the moment, so. Something comes through before we can get that done, and then we're looking at possibly paying another high deductible to get our roofs redone, depending on what the outcome was. So is that going to happen? Probably not. We hope not, but we don't know. So I agree. I think this year probably, until we get everything, like it's, you know, outside of as Jim mentioned, a 4-inch hail coming. We're pretty in good shape with the size hail that we've had. Then, yeah, if we can get that done the next year, there's probably no need to do the buy-down because we'll be in a good shape and nice physical buildings that can withstand, you know, some hail damage. Because we're going to get hail, guys. It's not going to. The idea, like Jim is saying, it's frequency of claims that's really killing us. Of course, the overall number, they don't know how much they're going to end up paying us, but frequency of claims, you know, they do the math equation. They're paying us X amount a month. We paid out X amount. We still don't know. We're still going to pay them out. You know, the risk of keeping them worth doing business with our return on investment here. So I think it is, and that's not without going back and forth. And Terry, you know, he talked me out of it once, and talked myself back into it. And it is. It's a you roll the dice, man. But here's the thing. My people voted me in because I'm supposed to protect, you know, we're supposed to protect this college. And if we have the funds to avoid a catastrophe, possibly, I don't know that we should do that. But I also understand that I am the insurance agent, so I respect everybody's opinion. Well, not be angry or mad at either decision. But
yeah.
I believe that we should, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to be mad at y'all for not believing that. I understand.
I mean, I think that gets down to, I mean, personally, I would probably take the risk. I'm not willing to take the risk with the college money. You know, that's, I think I have a higher duty to the college than I have to myself.
I personally took the risk for 2 years as I told them on my house. I had a 5% deductible, and I paid an insurance policy that I probably wouldn't have paid out. But I took that risk knowing that, like, but I would not do that with the college.
Just yeah.
I think that's kind of where we all, as we kept working through it, you know, we're just in a bad place right now.
Yeah, and again, man, everybody has a strong, good opinion for it, so nobody's wrong. You know, if you think it's silly to buy, do the buy down, then I really understand that. Thought process, I really do.
But it's one of those things. Is it would be different if there were different levels of it. You know, if you could buy down and it, for a little bit, or buy. You know,
it looks like there is.
Well,
the quote thing. It looks like there's 1, 2, and 3%.
Yeah. There is.
It is there. I mean, we haven't got pricing on that, but it is there.
Well, I guess is what I presume that they've come back with to get us back down to the 2, so it would be where we are. But and I suppose that if there was some really price benefit to some other level, then they would have presented that. But
he did a 3%, a buy down to 2%, and a buy down to 3%, and we talked a little bit about that on Friday. But but we just ended up going back to that 2%.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that example is there. Yeah, and we also asked the question, so if we, when the roofs are fixed, can there be a renegotiation, but it's annual.
Yeah.
All the
Yeah.
storms. I mean, guys, like, people are dropping like flies. Insurance companies are dropping like flies. If they are riding fire, what we call fire business, which is homeowners and dwellings, I mean, their companies are out, y'all. Uh-huh. And so they're freezing their agents from buying or being able to issue fire policies in California. Texas is coming again. You know, state farm for a year in 2010 or something, they froze homeowners. And unless you were grandfathered in, they couldn't ride a home. So that was like a year or two before I joined the State Farm. So it's happening again. So again, I feel kind of blessed that we have an opportunity to be covered
yeah.
of sorts.
Yeah, we're glad they didn't. Frankly, we were afraid that they might even.
So on that, I will also say, and I'll shut up after this unless you have any questions, but I will say I don't know Jim very well. He's been our agent, but I've not had the opportunity to meet him, but I met him Friday. There was no skeptical, but after speaking with him, I know he's done his homework, man. Like, the dude has worked his tail off to try to get us what the best deal that he can. I have full confidence on. I do. Really do.
Okay, Steve or Terry, Brenda, y'all were part of that conversation. Anybody have they think we should throw into the conversation?
Again, I think Jim made a point. I don't know if we caught that, but there are not many companies writing colleges or a lot of bigger churches anymore anyway, so it's less personal about, you've cost us too much money, so here's a shady deal for you. you know, it's like a lot of these companies are just refusing the business note, even if they didn't have a claim history. Like, we don't want to take that risk on because of how the weather patterns are now anymore. It's not worth us to be in that game anymore. You know, they're like, we're just going to write homes and cars and life insurance. We're not messing with the big stuff anymore. It's too risky, no matter what you think history is.
Okay, so I don't know what, you know, this is when, you know, I'm making a recommendation, y'all don't have to agree, but making a recommendation based on all the conversation and everything, that's what we always try to bring you, and then y'all make the final decision. But we worked through it all and felt like that that was the best option. And I think the comment that you made, Mark, that's kind of where we finally kind of got to. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, this is a responsibility we owe to the taxpayers of our county that are providing the brick and mortar. And the state provides the brick and mortar for our SWID campus, and then in San Angelo, basically, the students through their building, you know, they're paying for the revenue bonds are paying for those buildings, and so it's an effort to ensure that we're able to have the facilities that they want. And if the worst case scenario, you know, what we kept talking about on Friday was, God forbid, a tornado, you know, comes in, and then what do we do? So.
Well, we got to have insurance.
Got to have insurance.
Have insurance.
Yeah. And we did go ahead.
Well.
Yeah. We did go ahead, and we built it in as a part of the preliminary budget. We, you know, as I mentioned, how we handled it with the different sites and different budgets.
So do you need anything from us?
Oh, yeah, y'all are going to have to, you're going to have to.
Do you want a motion?
You got to, Mr. Chairman, you'll have to get a motion.
Well, we haven't really gone into the meeting yet until we have invocation and recognition of guests.
Well, I just moved us in. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I moved us in.
Do we need a motion now, or do we need a motion when we approve the budget?
Well, I put the insurance policies and premiums ahead of when you did the budget, because depending on what you do, it'll affect what that preliminary budget looks like. So
do I have a motion to approve the insurance policy and premiums?
In the buy-down?
In the buy-down?
I still move. 2%.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Now we're on to the preliminary budget for higher college in SWID.
Jim, thank you. We appreciate you.
Yes, sir. No, thank you all. I appreciate it. Any questions you have, I'm here.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to hang up on you unless you want to listen to the rest of our meeting.
No, thank you.
Yeah, all right. I'm Bye. Hanging up. Okay. Yes, sir. Were you going to say something, Mark?
Well, I just, and I may be in the wrong spot, but I noticed a little part down here about the cyber liability. Or we have the cyber.
We do have Lloyd's of London is providing our cyber.
Okay. And okay.
Yeah. Yep, we're covered.
And we're covered as well as we were.
Yes.
Okay.
That was actually less expensive.
Well, I saw that, and then I saw that deal at the bottom. I was like, making sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Covered with Lloyd's.
Okay, the item is preliminary budget.
Okay.
Detail.
All right. So, again, I kind of tried to blend in what I was talking about during the workshop that could work into this preliminary budget. So, discussion with that detail, you know, and you got all the detail as a part of your packet. So, If you're comfortable, if you feel like the budget is going to be doing what you want it to be doing, then I need a motion, Mr. Chairman.
I make a motion that we approve the no new revenue budget as proposed.
Huh? All right. Have a second.
Second.
have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Ben. Discussion of tax rate.
Okay, so then on the tax rate, that then also was trying to kind of build that into the workshop part in the preliminary budget conversation, so that now you have to determine what are you going to propose as your tax rate. We built, as we discussed, we built the budget right under the total NNR rate. And so that number, if you go back to what that is, that the rate that it's built on, the proposed total rate, is 0.236777. And if you, and again, that's under the total no new revenue rate. The total no new revenue rate is 237548. So it's under that. That will bring in essentially the same money that was generated last year in levy. And so then what will happen with that, if you propose that, then that's when that kicks in what the notices and all are going to be. And so if you decide you want to go over the total NNR, and because you want to do something else.
We just did that.
Yeah, you did, essentially. But if you did, it would create other things. So.
Can I ask how much, Brenda probably knows this more on top of it. Will we do the 236777 rather than the 237548? Just out of curiosity, how much money are we not raising?
$44,000. $44,000. Right. Have a motion to approve this no new revenue tax rate.
I move that we do a tax rate of 236777. Tax.
Okay, thank you, Ben. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay.
We will not need a scheduled budget, possible tax hearing then.
That's right. So as you move to the
extra time.
Yeah. So
you still have to do a motion at the August 30th meeting, right?
Yes. So moving, yes. All that was is just your proposed, you adopt at the 30th. This is just proposal time. So you have proposed that rate.
Is it 44,000? Is that just the interest in sinking, or is that, where does that come from?
The less?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's just going, we're not bringing in the same amount of money as was what was generated last year. We're going right under the total NNR. We're just not doing that. So it's 44,000 less. And basically, it's hard to explain, but they bring in as a part of what you they consider your levy. They bring in, like, if there's, and help me remember this, Brenda. They bring in properties that might have been paid on from a year before or something like that, and that comes in. And so we just took it down to what we levied, so that we're bringing in the same amount of money.
It's statistical somehow.
Yeah, it is. Just for the calculation worksheet.
Any more questions on that? Okay, our next item on the agenda then is open our college update.
Okay, before that, on the scheduling of the budget, and I know you were just saying that's correct. We don't, with that decision, you do not have to have a tax hearing. But remember, by policy, we have a budget hearing. And so that's something that we just, y'all's policy, we always have a budget hearing. What we do is on the 30th, you'll have a budget hearing prior to when you go into your regular meeting, and you'll approve your budget, adopt the tax rate. So that'll be on the 30th as general. Okay.
Thank
and
you.
Then Open Howard College.
Open Howard College.
Okay. So as you know, we brought the information to you on the 2nd, and things have continued to change. We're still updating. I was planning on having something that would be an update for you today, but I'm working with our COVID task force. I'm working with them, and we're looking at adjusting some things. There have been some things that have been added relative to the coordinating boards come out with something, as well as we included into our document what TEA is doing, kind of using all of that as a backdrop. We are also adjusting, you remember our alert status? We are looking at that, and we're changing that up a little bit because in looking at the AMBER, if you'll remember, the AMBER level was, I really kind of designed that more to how we were at the beginning of last year. And because we find ourselves right now, we're feeling like we need to take some caution as we're beginning the semester with what's happening with COVID cases, they're surging, the hospitalizations, all that, and so we're feeling like we need to take a little precaution. As you all know, we bring in students that literally come in from all over the country, sometimes the world, and so there's opportunity for transmission coming into our world that we operate in every day. And so we are leaning toward that, and so what I'm doing, proposing to do, and we're working on that AMBER. I'm going to take it more to what we were like at the end of the year and instead of the beginning of the year. And so we've kind of adjusted that out. And then also, of course, all of that relates to trying to keep up with what the state, the governor is wanting us to do, what the federal government. We're trying to work through all of that and make sure that we're handling everything the way that we're being directed to do. And so that's what we're doing at this point in time. So with the authority y'all have given me during altered operations, I will be making those changes after we're able to assess some more. I will report back to you and let you know. But we, are feeling like we need to just take a little caution here, and then we're going to hopefully be able to start back up and move back into the yellow section pretty quick. We'll watch what's going on with hospitalizations and cases in the area. Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Okay, there are no heading book catalog changes.
That's correct.
So we have San Angelo Health Area Foundation grants submittals.
Yes, sir. As I mentioned during the workshop, we are submitting a couple of proposals, grant proposals to the San Angelo Health Foundation and the Area Foundation, and need your approval to do that.
Moved.
Have a motion to approve. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Faculty retirement resolution.
All right. Robert Reed, one of our faculty at the FCI, is retiring. Actually, we've had four retire this summer. But I'd like for you to approve his retirement resolution.
Okay. And the motion, do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. President's report.
Okay, your activities, we kind of talked a little bit about it already, but in particular, you need to remember that your next meeting will be on the 30th, and again, you'll have the things we've already talked about that will be taking place during that meeting, and then I've already touched on some of these things in your calendar relative to Dreams Week and that. I will say, to bring your attention, we have set up vaccine clinics. We're going to have a vaccine clinic on the spring site on the 26th, and then we have two set up in San Angelo, 2nd and the 23rd. And those vaccine clinics, any of our students, employees, can take advantage of those on any campuses if they wish. It's not required, but we're just we're giving these opportunities for people if they choose to take the vaccine. And in fact, the one on the 26th, Scenic Mountain, is basically they're bringing the clinic to the campus, and that will likely be open to anybody in the community. So we're working on getting that done. I won't go into anything past the 30th because we can talk about all that when we get to the 30th. So, Mr. Chairman, can I keep going and
yes,
get y'all out of here?
Do.
Okay. And so then recognitions. I want to give a special recognition to Travis, who is over our EMS program in San Angelo and actually for the entire district working on our EMS program. And we got a glowing report on we had a review and it was perfect. And so that is something to be very proud of. He works very hard. And so we want to give him recognition for that. Legislative and general update. We are in our second special session. As you know, there's not a lot of progress being made. Everybody knows the scenario that we have. As far as the community colleges, we don't think that there's going to be a lot of activity during the second special session based on what they have on the agenda relative to the colleges at this point. It may change, but we don't think that there will be. But when we get to the legislative special session planned for the fall, we do think that that'll be the time they'll be talking about the federal dollars, and there will be some interest in that particular at that point. And we will be working on a platform as far as for the community colleges in general. And that is all that I have, Mr. Chairman and board members.
All I have to report is that my granddaughter is now a nurse. Excuse me.
Because she took that program at Howard College, and she graduated in May, and then she passed her test.
First try.
And so she is now helping build that 100% pass rate we hope to have.
She is working in the emergency room at Midland Memorial Hospital.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So that's what happened. That's what's going on. And that's also one of the things I might say, Mr. Chairman, that we're trying to be sensitive to with what we're doing with our COVID approach. Because the impact that's going on for our hospitals and the hospital personnel, they are worn out across the whole country. But there's a lot of impact going on, and the hospitalization rate. If you're following any of that, Texas Tribune puts out something every day, and our whole state is as of yesterday, and they probably already have something out by now. We only had 3 of the trauma areas in the state of Texas that were not in the highest level. We have moved into 18%, and to get into the highest level, it's 15%, and there's some that have a much higher rate. So it's impacting hospitalizations. And
my son-in-law, he had a brain bleed about 10 days ago, and it took him 8 hospitals to get where he could get to an emergency room.
Yep.
They were all full of COVID.
That's real. That's real. We had another a college community member who had a family member who had just a regular, I say regular, not regular, for if you're the person having the fall, but had a fall requiring being taken to the emergency room in Lubbock, and having to wait, an older person having to wait to be able to be taken in.
Yeah. Well, he had to wait till the next day. He needed really attention right then. But where he was in Marble Falls, and they didn't have the facilities to do it.
Yeah.
So they finally got him in the next day.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
My nephew was in MT.
Very good.
The latest figures I saw is that Howard County is 26% vaccinated.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming. And so by the authority commanded, I declare this meeting adjourned.
All right.
Thank you all very much.
That's right. I'm vaccinated.
Thank you.
I'm hanging up.
So,
right. See you on the 30th.
All righty.
This is Rhonda. Resources. This is Rhonda. Hello?
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.